the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.
Hello and welcome to this April 2014 edition of Education Now. I am your host, Athena Melville. In this edition, it is my pleasure to welcome Tamara Wilder for a focus on paleotechnics, the arts of technologies of early peoples. Tamara has been learning, researching, experimenting with and teaching ancient living skills since 1989. That's over 20 years. Hello, Tamara, and thank you for taking the time to join me for this interview.
Good morning, Athena, and thank you very much for contacting me.
Oh, it's just my great pleasure. I heard about you through a teacher who took his students to a workshop. So that was very exciting. And could you tell our listeners how you started in this amazing adventure?
That was a long time ago. I was attending UC Santa Cruz and got exposed to what is sort of a culture or subculture of people who practice ancient living skills. So I got invited by a friend to go to a gathering that was happening, and I just got really excited about it and I think got hooked.
Uh-huh.
And it sort of became my life. So for me, it was just sort of fortuitous.
So 20 years later, here you are.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's right. So tell, in some detail, what is a paleotechnology?
A paleotechnology, the way I define that, and there's also a term that there's part of what came out of these events that started happening 20 years ago or longer ago that I became involved in, is we created something called the Society of Primitive Technology. And it's a biannual magazine that comes out. It's a nonprofit, and people join, and it's a highly recommended publication. And at that time, 20 years ago, we decided to make the name Primitive Technology. We were trying to reclaim the true meaning of the word primitive, which is not meaning backwards, not meaning lesser in any way.
Right, not pejorative in any sense.
Right, not pejorative, but it comes from this definition of the root word prime, which prime is first, you know, the beginning of anything, or the prime numbers, the first, it's number one, which is not pejorative. It's the beginning, it's the roots of the tree, it's the thing that holds everything up, you know, it's everything there is. And then the other meaning of the root word prime is, as when we use it, like when we talk about prime colors, this actually means essential. So something that's primitive has to be there for the things that have followed to be there.
Right.
And then the third meaning of the root word prime is actually best. Like we say prime example or prime rib or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so that was why we were trying to reclaim that true meaning. The primitive form of anything is actually really important to the modern form. It's not that it's backwards. It's the structure that holds anything modern up, really. And so that's why we were pairing that word with the word technology in an attempt to try to make people understand that these technologies, these foundational technologies, the oldest technologies, are still true technologies, and that they still are the foundation of the technologies that we have today. But the problem is that it didn't really work. Everybody's got such a pejorative view of the word primitive that I started around 10 years ago starting to use the word paleo when I'm talking about myself. So I still talk about the word primitive, but I don't want to have it be the word that I describe my occupation with, because then I don't have the chance to explain it to people.
Right.
And so I have switched over to paleotechnologies, and that's what, just by chance, that's paleotechnics is what I came up for my business name years and years ago. And so what I'm defining paleo basically as is sort of a loose definition of hunter-gatherer existence or hunter-gatherer technologies. So when I talk about something being in the paleo, it's that span of time starting over a million years ago when people first did the earliest technologies of breaking stone tools or trying to use fire as a tool which those date back, we think, 1.4 million years ago and 1.5 million years ago. So that would be the very, very beginning of all of this, the very tips of the roots of that tree. And then the paleo, in my definition of it, pretty much goes until any culture or any group of people adopts a lot of agriculture and moves out of becoming primarily hunter-gatherer. And so that's sort of what I loosely define it as, and I like to define it that way because there are a lot of cultures on the earth today that are still living as hunter-gatherers primarily. So it's not something that's only in the past. And, you know, and the times when different people moved into adopting agriculture is different all around the world. So it's sort of, it's not a real solid timeline.
Right.
And it's a very loose definition that covers a lot of things. But it's basically when we're doing things, sort of the technologies that we focus on are using our hands to make things, make the things that we need, essentially.
Right. What are some of the, you said so much and all of it is so exciting to me, of course, because I have, I'm always, you know, trying to explain to people that I'm not talking about primitive in the pejorative. And then how removed so many people are from actual nature.
Right.
Where these primitive societies developed these skills and, you know, knew the plants and how to process the animals and were living in a sort of balance with the world around them. And so this is just extraordinarily exciting for me, what you're doing. It's just awesome.
Yeah, now, well, that's why it's so exciting to the kids as well in the program, because they're given a chance to actually do things, you know, with their hands, because that's the technology part, is the way that I define technology, is that it's anything that actually any creature does. You know, other creatures use small forms of technology.
Right.
But we're the ones that are dependent on it. We need it for our existence. And it's so technology is anything that any creature does, the way I define it, when they use the tools that they're born with on their bodies to alter and change their natural environment to create anything they need or want. So anytime we're using something we have the ability to do to alter things, and so as humans, our two main tools that we're born with is our hands, which can manipulate things to a greater degree than most other creatures can. But then the other half of that is our brain, which comes up with the ideas for our hands to do. And those are the two tools that have co-evolved together in our evolution that have made us who we are today, and those two tools are completely dependent on technology. That's why we're so dependent on technology, is because we can't just do things with what we're born with. We don't have claws. We don't have fur. You know, a lot of the other creatures that live on the earth, they live in, like, on the earth interacting with things, but they don't have to create that much.
Right.
And that's why technology is so important to us. And one of the things that I get feedback constantly in my adult programs and in my kids' programs is this idea that technology is a new thing. And that people get anti-technology and say, oh, I want to give up technology, I want to get rid of technology. And that's impossible. We can't exist as humans on this planet without technology.
Yeah. Another thing that you said that sparked a lot of reading that I've done is about the domestication of animals. Well, you didn't really use that, but you said agriculture. And
right.
I think those two kind of came along somewhat at the same time. And that there's strong evidence that we started altering in the pejorative sense, our environment with the domestication of animals.
Yeah, definitely. When you look back all around the world, domestication of animals and plants, agriculture in both forms, plant and animal, when that starts happening, there's a lot of places where it's used minimally in conjunction with hunter-gatherer.
Right.
Existence. And that seems to, in some cases, have kept some sort of a balance, but there is this, whenever that started happening in different places, it's easy to tip over into becoming primarily agricultural. And in the areas of the world that has happened all around the world, it's happened in huge empires have been built up and they've gone extinct or gone into a demise following this. The biggest thing for me is that it allows the population to get out of balance.
Right.
When you are using forms of agriculture. And you do start impacting the environment to a greater degree than if you're hunting and gathering.
Right. A lot of people say, well, why do people care? You know, I have so many children. I say, well, really, in primitive societies, they didn't have huge families. You know,
no, that's what they think, because they had to keep their population in balance.
Right.
Pests in balance, because there weren't. Agriculture gives you a really big sort of buffer.
Right. And I think there's also this instinct that, you know, if you feel like your species is in jeopardy, then you keep having more and more children trying to, you know, preserve, you know, trying to make sure that your genetics, you know, your genes stay on the planet. And so that's another probably reason why a lot of cultures are having so many children and just going way overboard. Well, I think we get
out of balance, and there's definitely no, like, all primitive cultures are this way or all ancient cultures did this. We've been making the same mistakes, in my opinion. We've been making the same sort of general trends over and over and over all throughout our history and throughout our existence. And it's, you know, you find samples of, you know, big empires that came into being in North America and big empires that were in Central America or whatever. You know, there's a lot of movement and a lot of change that
right.
happens. And so, but in general, it seems like cultures that remain primarily hunter-gatherer don't tend to develop high population bases because it's just not part of the system.
Right.
And that's with population comes problems, which is what we're facing today.
I agree. So do you think you covered the seven basic things that we need to survive?
No, I don't think so. I like to talk about them because it's a thing that I ask. It's part of how I talk about technology, like why do we need technology and where do we need technology? And so the way I look at it is that the seven basic things we are, number one, is we need air. And we don't need technology in our normal existence for air, just something that's all around. But if we go into outer space or if we're going underwater, you know, then we use technology in order to be able to breathe. The second main thing is water. We have to have water. We can't go that long without water.
Right.
And a lot of people like to say, oh, we don't need technology for water, but it's actually the only way you would not need technology for water is if you were constantly remaining right next to a good water source. Because even needing to make a container to be able to carry water from your water source back to your camp is using technology to make it so that you can have your water.
Right.
And then nowadays we transport water through pipes to great extent. And then nowadays also with water pollution, you know, we need to have technology to make the water drinkable for us. And so, you know, there's all these different levels of technology. So we really have been applying technology to keeping our water with us for quite a long time as well. On all different levels. And then food is the next one. And we use technology to create food constantly. Agriculture big time nowadays, but even as a hunter-gatherer society, the tools that you make to hunt the animals that you're eating, those are technologies, because remember, we don't have teeth, we don't have long, you know, long claws, we don't have the ability to run fast, you know, as a predator. So we have to make all those tools in order to get our food. And even with a lot of plant processing, there's some plants you can just go and harvest, you know, just from the plant how they are and eat. But there's a lot of other processing which requires technology and other tools to process plant materials, such as acorns,
right.
or such as other kind of roots that they use all around the world. So, you know, food, pretty much we have to have technology to be able to really effectively survive and feed ourselves. And then the next one that I bring in is clothing and shelter. So those are, you know, shelter building is actually one place where I like to point out that a lot of other animals do a little bit of technology,
mm-hmm.
You know, in constructing different things. But we're the creatures that need the most extravagant shelters.
Right.
And so we use a lot of technology in building our shelters. Other animals also do use stones for breaking, for food. That was one thing that I forgot to mention. So otters will use a rock to break open a mussel shell or something like that. So that's a mild form of technology. You know, they're making a tool, they're creating, using a tool. But then we have clothing of learning how to clothe ourselves. And that's something we have to do because we don't have fur to keep ourselves warm.
Yesterday, a student I was working with, we were talking about human needs, and she just felt that we didn't really need clothes.
In the ideal sort of middle of the equator environment, sure.
I just thought it was so great, though. I mean, she was just thinking about, no, we don't need clothes. And what was the other one? Oh, we don't need to work. That was the other one.
Yeah.
So go on with the seven basic needs.
Well, yeah. Well, one example of that is I just went on a camping trip down south, and we got caught in one of those big storms, and we were camped on the bluff over the ocean, and all the kids were wearing cotton clothing, and everybody got drenched within a really short period of time, and it was a cold storm, and it was windy, and very, very quickly they understood why they need clothing, and also why they need clothing that will still keep them warm when they're wet. And shelter, actually, because all their tents blew down as well. So it was good. When you're in the elements, when it's not a nice day, you definitely need clothing and shelter, or you feel horrible pretty quickly.
Right.
So then, after clothing and shelter, then we come in with fire, which is a very, very important one. And it's really the technology that sets us above any other animal that lives on the earth, because we have learned how to control fire, and we have learned how to create fire, and we use fire to a great degree in all of our other technologies. And that's a big one. And then the last thing that I say is something that we need to, in order to survive, is just other people, community.
Yeah, community.
So that's the seventh thing.
Right. Yeah, people need people, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you did mention the two human tools, the brain and the hand, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are the tools that we actually use to create everything else that we need.
Right.
And they're coming into studies, and they're doing a lot of things where they are discovering that they really think that those two tools co-evolved for a very, very long time. I look at it as, you know, our hand might have been able to do something, and it gave our brain an idea of something to do. And then our brain came up with more things for our hands to do, so along those lines.
Right.
That they became the main tools. And that's how we became so technologically dependent, because we aren't just born with what we need to survive on our bodies, which is what makes us a little bit different as humans than most of the rest of the creatures that live on the earth.
Yes.
It also gives us the power to alter and manipulate our environment to a greater degree and cause greater imbalance and greater destruction, because we have that ability.
Right. Another student, we were reading about fur, feathers, scales, and skin, and he said, but they all have skin. It's just that some of them have feathers on their skin, and some of them have fur on their skin, and some of them have scales on their skin. And I said, well, you know, I think you're right.
It's very true. And that's actually, when we talk about the earliest clothing, is tanning skins and skin clothing. And the way I like to present that in my programs, I bring skin and all the different, because I do a lot of tanning, and I bring skin and all the different stages. And the theory, when I like to say, is that, you know, our earliest ancestors looked around at what the other animals were wearing. And, you know, they're hunting the animals, they're using the animals as their food and as their tools, and, you know, so utilizing all the parts. And the first thing you do is you take the skin off. And when you've first taken it off of an animal, it's the most beautiful, soft, flexible, you know, you can see how great it is, and you know that it's helping keep the animal warm. And so you try to figure out how to make it keep you warm. It's like, oh, well, I want to wear that skin just like the animal is wearing. But then you have to understand, you have to start understanding the earliest sciences. You have to start understanding chemistry in order to be able to understand what you need to put on the skin in order to keep it soft, because as soon as it starts drying, it gets hard and stiff. And so you have to be coming up with lubricants, and you have to be coming up with things which are, you know, if any materials, other animal materials, the brains of the animal, if they come into contact with that skin, they keep it, they allow it to stay softer. And then, you know, smoke, if you're around a smoky fire, the smoke affects the skin. And so people would have been observing these chemical effects on the skin and starting to understand chemistry and figuring out how to tan hides. And that, you know, and that's basically taking what the other animals are wearing and putting it on yourself. And that's a huge thing. And it's how people probably really were able to effectively live through a lot of climate change and a lot of harsh environments and move away from the area of the earth that they could live on without clothing on.
Now, are you saying that smoke actually helps keep it soft?
Well, smoke's the curing process. So the brains, the fatty acids in the brains, lecithin and glycerin, and egg yolks also have that in them, and there's some other things. They lubricate the fibers and allow you to make it soft, but the smoke actually coats all the fibers, and technically it cross-links the collagen fibers, and it builds bridges and changes the way the skin reacts to water. So it's what actually creates, it makes it into leather.
How fascinating.
The smoke does the same thing as tannic acid does. When you're tanning a hide by soaking it in tree bark, that's the other kind of tanning.
Uh-huh.
There's two main kinds of tanning. There's the brain tanning, which is using the fatty acids, and then there's what we call bark tanning, or using the tannic acid from tree barks. And they make very different kinds of leather, but in each one of them, it's the smoke that's the tanning agent in the brain tanning, and the tannic acid that's the tanning agent in the bark tanning.
Oh, this is just fascinating. How wonderful. Just makes me want to come and take a class from you.
It's fun, Kim. And then all the hunting tool stuff and all the figuring out how to throw a spear and all of that, how to even throw a stick to make it spin through the air, even how to throw a spear straight to, like for a rabbit stick, you're spinning it and to spinning it forward so it flips around like a propeller.
Uh-huh.
And for a hand spear, you have to spin it so that it cuts through the air like a javelin. And then with a spear thrower, you're actually throwing your spear with another thrower. That's all physics. That's all aerodynamics. So
right.
That's all learning how to understand how things fly through the air.
Right. So you talk some more about what you teach.
Well, and one of the main things I do is I go into schools very often in sixth grade in a normal public school system because
uh-huh.
that's when they're studying early humans and ancient civilizations. And so I go in and then in the Waldorf schools or other schools, very often I go in fourth grade. So it's anywhere from third to seventh or eighth grade is where I go, but primarily sixth grade. And I come in for the day and we're doing a hands-on exploration of ancient technologies, of all the different things that they can get or try. So there's a lot of samples. They get to look at the tanning. I talk about a lot of the stuff I've just been talking about. And then we go through, and they basically break into three stations, and they spend 45 minutes to an hour, each group of kids of 10, doing each one of these things. And they come away with something they've completely made from scratch themselves. So they twist the bark of a stick. I show them how to take it off of the stick, and then they twist fiber and make it into a piece of string, which string making is one of the oldest and most important technologies, is learning how to take soft fibers and twist them into a cohesive unit called string, which is then what you can make rope out of. But they all make a string, and then they use sticks that they spin between their hands, and they drill holes in stone, little soft soapstone, and they make little beads that they're putting on their necklace they're taking home. And in doing that, they're learning how to drill through something. They're learning how to shape something by grinding it, and then they're also polishing with horsetail, which is a wild plant that's abrasive, and then they oil it. And so they're sort of doing all of the processing that you would use to process anything, to shape bone or to shape wood. You know, they're using all the different techniques. And then that drilling technique they use for drilling through the stone is also practice for hand drill fire making. So they get to attempt to try to make fire. And usually at some point during the day, somebody makes a fire. and so we do friction fire making in that step. And then they make beads out of pine nuts by grinding the ends off, and then they can poke the nut meat out, which is in food, or they can use it to oil other things as well. So they go through that whole sort of practice, and they really enjoy all those processes, and they come away with something they take home. And I've gotten feedback where I run into students from 16, 20 years ago that tell me they still have the necklace that they made.
Right. Well, it's also hands-on. And, of course, in Montessori school, This early humans is a part of the curriculum from the time they start school.
Yeah, around in third grade is usually when I go into Montessori schools.
Uh-huh.
It everything I'm talking about, even though I'm not Montessori trained, has the teachers always say, oh, this jives exactly with what we're doing.
That's right. That's exactly what I heard from the Montessori teacher who said, you need to have Tamara Wadler on your show, Athena.
I love going into Montessori schools. It's really fun. But then the last activity we have is in the program is they spend, you know, they're doing their project, but then they have a whole 45 minutes that they run around and do evolution of hunting technology. So they're out in the field. They get to move around, and they get to throw rabbit sticks at a box, so acting like it's a small animal they're hunting, which is just the stick you throw through the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then we play hoop and pole games, so they throw hand spears at rolling hoops, so they have a moving target that they're trying to do and hit. And then they throw the spear thrower, or it's called the atlatl, is the Aztec name of it, and that's the form
right.
that was developed in Central America. So basically they're throwing a spear, and the spear thrower was developed around 20 or 30,000 years ago for hunting mammoths.
Right.
And so we talk about the development of that, and they get to try it and see the difference between a hand spear. That's what I ask the kids, when they're throwing the hand spear, I say, imagine you have to run up with this and you're hunting a giant woolly mammoth. Like, and you see how far you can throw the spear, imagine you have to get that close to a mammoth. and realized that would be really dangerous and scary. Mm-hmm. And this is why people figured out that they wanted to be able to throw their spear with something else so that they could stay further away, and also increase the velocity and do all that kind of stuff. And then they get to shoot a bow and arrow as well.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah, it's fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, what other events do you have?
I am currently helping organize a thing called, we have Ancient Living Skills Gatherings, Ancestral Living Skills Gatherings, we call them, that happen throughout the country, and they're at all different times of the year. But I personally help organize one called the Buckeye Gathering that will be up in near Chico at the end of this month.
And I actually know someone who's coming.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great.
Yeah,
so that's my focus right now is the Buckeye, and we're sold out. There's no more tickets available. We have a long waiting list, but I'm helping organize the other instructors. And so for these skills gatherings, they're week-long format, and we have, you know, 80 to 100 instructors like me all teaching their stuff through the week, and then we have attendees that come, and it's we build a village for a week, and we all practice skills and spend time together, and they're very fun. And that's how I first got introduced to this. These were at the original of these gatherings. It's called the Rabbit Stick.
Uh-huh.
Rendezvous, which is in Idaho every September. And I think it's like 25th or 26th year now.
Uh-huh.
And those gatherings are amazing. And so the Rabbit Stick still happens, and its counterpart, the Winter Count, happens in Arizona still. And they happen each year. And these are what the Buckeye Gathering sort of has taken its template from.
Right.
And they still there. So there's a whole movement of people that go around, teachers that teach at the gatherings, people that go around and share skills. And there's a whole list of them, and they're all listed on my website.
Well, when the family that's coming to the Buckeye Gathering, this won't be their first year, but their son is someone I interact with, and this boy who's just going to be 8 in May, he catches wild turkeys with his hands.
Mm-hmm.
He gets pheasants by throwing rocks at them.
Right.
And I think that he's probably learned a lot of that at these gatherings.
Yeah, our gatherings are very family friendly and very kid oriented.
Yeah.
And, you know, the kids are learning how to do everything. They're not just sort of being entertained. They're learning the skills, and
right.
They walk around and, you know, they're emulating it. The adults, they're all doing things with their hands, and the kids are wanting to do just as much. And so even after a couple of years, even though they're very young, a lot of times, in some cases, they learn more than their parents do and pick up more skills even.
Right.
They're highly recommended. We do sell out really quickly with the Buckeye Gathering, but it will happen again next year.
Right.
Then the other things that I have coming up is I'm going to have a booth on the bead making at the Maker Faire down in San Mateo, at the San Mateo Fairgrounds.
Bead Maker Faire?
The Maker Faire.
The Maker Faire.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you do bead making at the Maker Faire.
Yes, I do bead making at the Maker Faire, and I will be there again this year, and I'll also be doing a demonstration on Sunday of string making at the Maker Faire.
Uh-huh.
And then that same weekend, there's also a women's healing conference in the Los Altos Hills, and so I am giving a presentation as well on one of the days at the healing conference.
On women's healing.
It's a women's healing conference, but I'm giving a presentation on I'm calling it Ancient Living Skills and Ancestral Earth Connection. So how talking of sort of what I've been talking about, but talking about how practicing these skills is a way of reconnecting with the earth and you know, getting grounded, because that's really what it is. I personally believe that people, because we live in a world nowadays where everything is done for us. Like, we really could go through our entire lives with pretty much never having really done anything for ourselves with our own hands. You know, if you chose to, you could. You could almost do that. And so much is done for people. We're so used to using our hands to create and make things and understand things. We're very tactile creatures that I feel like that's one of the reasons that these technologies and doing these projects are so attractive to people, and why kids just sit down in the middle of a huge fair with robots running around for 2 hours and make a bead, because they just need that connection of just doing something.
Right.
And so it's a very grounding activity. It's very sort of just physically pleasing, and it's tapping into something that's just hardwired in us.
Now, where the women's healing conference, is that what you called it?
Yeah, it's a conference, and I'm just one presenter, and it's mostly around women's healing
techniques. Right, and what's it called?
It's called the Women's Healing Conference.
And where is it taking place?
It's going to be at Hidden Villa in the Los Altos Hills.
Hidden Villa in the Los Altos Hills.
Yeah, and their website is, I believe, just womenshealingconference.com.
And when is it happening?
It's on, the conference is May 16th and 17th.
May 16th and 17th. Well, now, the Buckeye gathering, that's the end of April, 1st of May, right?
Yeah, it's April 27th to May 3rd.
Right. And then the Maker Fair that you were talking about, that's happening in
San Mateo. That's May 17th and 18th.
May 17th and 18th. Okay.
Yeah. So my presentation at the Women's Healing Conference is actually, it's an intensive that's a whole weekend, but the one-day conference when the presentations are happening is just the 17th.
Okay.
So I'll be giving my presentation on the 17th there, and then I'm going to be leaving the Maker Faire shortly and leaving it in the hands of my very competent assistants while I run back and forth.
Yeah. So I'm glad that you have helpers.
Yeah, I have a lot of assistants, and I have a lot of people that work with me, which is really nice. So then the other, I have an animal processing class. That's one thing that I do, is teach people how to process and utilize animals. So it's slaughtering animals in a humane way, you know, appreciating them. And the way I believe, as in hunter-gatherer societies, and if you're going to take the life of an animal, you're sort of your duty to honor its life by doing as much as you can with everything that it created while it was alive.
Right.
And so I'm doing a small animal processing class in Petaluma on May 31st. And June 1st, and that will be, one day we'll be doing rabbits, and one day we'll be doing chickens.
That's great, because I know someone who's doing rabbits right now.
so that's that, and I'm right now updating my website, so these things will be up in the next couple of days. I'm a little bit behind.
That's okay, you're so busy.
so that one's a really fun class, and then I also do a pig processing workshop.
I know people with pigs!
I do that in the middle of January each year. So that date hasn't been set, but we are planning on doing it again this year. And that one's a really amazing class. It's called Using the Whole Animal, and it's a really powerful class, and we make a lot of really good food. So we use all of the internal parts. We use the whole entire thing.
Right. Well, I come from a family where my grandfather would slaughter a pig or a goat or a sheep. And we would use the entire animal, and we would usually roast it out in the open, you know, out in a public park, or up in the woods or something like that, you know, where we would have, like, you know, and I love it. I don't think that some of my relatives are really having that experience the way that I did, which is sad. Now, you currently offer 4-hour to 1-day hands-on ancient living skills overview programs for schools and homeschool groups all around Northern California. You're still doing that right now, right?
Yeah. I have several scheduled in this next month that I'm going to. So that's the core thing that I do. That none of those are posted on my website because they're just private. People call me, and we set the date, and I come in with my assistants, and we work with a group of kids for the day. Mostly it's for 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours.
Uh-huh.
It's usually only with homeschool groups where they want to take a whole day, and, you know, it's a different thing where we go all day. But usually in the schools, it's either a morning program or it just goes until just after lunch.
And sometimes you do this for somebody's birthday party?
Yeah, I've done that quite often. It's really fun, especially, you know, 10 and 11-year-olds. That's the perfect age for them.
Uh-huh.
They want to have that as a birthday party.
Oh, man, it sounds wonderful. Just wonderful.
Yeah, they enjoy it. And then I will be, there's a thing down in Point Reyes called the Big Time. It happens at Point Reyes National Seashore, and I'll be offering my bead-making activity and doing a string-making demonstration there on July 19th. And then I will also be doing very similar stuff. I'm a big supporter of the Not So Simple Living Fair in Boonville, California. And that'll be July 25th to 27th. And so on the 26th and the 27th, I'll be presenting, I'm not sure on what yet, probably string making and foods and things like that. And then I'll have my booth of a bunch of books that I sell, and the kids' bead making activity as well will be happening there at the Mendocino County Fairgrounds.
In Boonville.
Yes, in Boonville on July 26th and 27th.
I don't know why your level, the recording level dropped, but do speak up.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't think anything has changed. But those are the things that I have for sure planned right now. There's a couple other things that are in the works, but I don't have any dates or it's not confirmed yet.
Right. But in Boonville, you at the what is it called again?
At the Not So Simple Living Fair.
Not So Simple Living Fair in Boonville in July.
At July 25th. Well, it's a 25th evening start, but it's the 26th and the 27th is the actual fair.
Uh-huh.
And that's at the Mendocino County Fairgrounds. And they've got a beautiful website. And it's a highly recommended event. It's really fun. It brings a lot of stuff together.
Yes.
One of many presenters.
I know. I've heard so much about it and seen great pictures, and I just wanted to be sure it was out loud and clear on this interview.
Yeah, it's their website is notsosimple.info. And I love the name of that because when we were talking about it, it's saying, you know, well, people say, oh, these are simple living skills, and we started saying, well, they're not that simple.
Yeah.
So that's why they're all pretty complicated, and there's a lot of, just like the technologies that have all the science in them. You know, none of this is easy.
No.
Even if it's basic, even if it's foundational, it's not something that is super, that simple isn't just the right word. So we say not so simple.
Right, because people don't understand that something that can appear simple, mm-hmm. is really involved.
It's actually very complex. And the Not So Simple Living Fair is different in that it's sort of homesteading skills and back to the land skills, or what we call it is rural living skills. So it's a little bit more modern, most of what's going on there, than what I normally teach.
Right.
But it's great. So it's people sharing cheese making, how they work with animals, you know, everything you can imagine. It's basically anybody who does anything in rural Mendocino County is invited to come and share their skills.
Yes.
And it's a really great community interaction. It's a wonderful event.
Do speak up, though. I just don't know
okay.
why. Your levels were nice and firm when we got started, and then at some point they dropped down.
Huh, I wonder if something is going on with this phone.
I don't know.
I will try to talk louder. I'm sorry. So that's sort of what I have coming up. There's one thing that is hopefully going to be scheduled, but I don't want to say where, but I try to do a paleo camp, a kids camp. So it's a five-day summer camp at one point during June.
A five-day summer camp?
Five-day summer camp for kids. So it's a lot of the stuff I do at the school programs, and then we add two or three other activities. And I'm still confirming the where and how that it's going to happen, but I'm hoping that it's going to be that week of July 16th to 20th is what I'm hoping to have happen, but I have not gotten it confirmed yet.
Okay. Well, do take some time for yourself.
I need to, yeah, for sure. But and I will be. I don't work all the time, but there's a lot going on.
Okay, so I want to be sure we get out all the websites. There's a website for you, which is the 3 W's, paleotechnics.com, right? 3 W's dot paleotechnics.com.
That's my website, and there's links to everything else from that website
right.
as well.
And you have a Facebook page, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's a Paleotechnics is on Facebook.
Right. And then you have a blog.
Yes, and that is primarily my business partner, who is Stephen Edholm. He is he primarily does the WordPress blog, but it's paleotechnics.wordpress.com.
Paleotechnics.wordpress.com.
Yes, and so it's a lot of his writings about all of the different stuff we're doing, and he's really making that a really, really nice, extensive thing. I primarily do in the business partnership that we have, I do all of the teaching and the traveling and going to the events, and he is more home-based because of homesteading and things like that, and so he does the writing on the web, on the blog, and shares the information.
Right. And do you want to give us some more information about books and articles?
The books can be found. There's a list of all of them on the website, paleotechnics.com. Stephen Edholm and I co-wrote, I guess it's getting over 18 years ago now or something, we co-wrote a book called Buckskin, The Ancient Art of Brain Tanning, and that's on tanning deer skins using the brain tanning method, which is really highly recommended. It's a hard, it's a challenging skill for people that don't have good guidance, and so that we published that book years and years ago. So that's our main publication. And then there's a bunch more in progress right now, but there's a series of what we call paleotechnics publications or paleotechnics handbooks, and there's one on called So You Have a Dead Animal? It's about processing an animal. So basic taking an animal through so that it's not going to rot on you and you can utilize all the parts. And then we have one that's on sustainable harvest and how to harvest the things you need to take into consideration when harvesting wild plants so that you're not impacting the plants in the area too heavily. And then there's another one on sharpening and it's sort of assessing steel tools and sharpening things. And for some reason right now I'm forgetting what the fourth one is. I see it all the time, but it's gotten out of my head. But those are what we're writing, and then there's currently other ones that are in the works, but they've been in the works a while. It's hard to take time to actually focus on writing and getting those handbooks done. But then in the catalog, I sell a lot of other books that are written by friends and colleagues. And so there's links to really, really good information, and there's several that we have had chapters in the past. Both Stephen at Home and I have had chapters in the past. And it's just highly, highly recommended books.
So now the list of these books and these links, they're found on the website?
Yes, they're on my website. And people can also go to my website and email me and get on the mailing list. And about three or four times a year, I just do it seasonally. I'm getting one ready right now for the spring season. I just send one email out every three or four months. I don't harangue people, and it's got links to all this stuff, and you know, so that they can find it all. And then if they go to the website, there's also a downloadable class list. That's the scheduled classes folder or scheduled classes thing that they can download and print. That has information about all the things that I have that are open to the public or the events that I'll be going to.
So everything that we've talked about is on the website, 3ws.paleotechnics.com.
Yes, exactly. All the links and all the information.
All the links and all the information. And do the books and everything.
Yes. There's a whole thing called the catalog, and all the books are listed in there with pictures and everything.
And the blog is on there, too, on that website.
It's a WordPress blog, so it's not on the website right now. We're trying to figure that out, but there is a link from the website to the blog. But it's paleotechnics.wordpress.com.
Yes, that's what I meant. That there was a link to the blog from the website. And if people cannot remember this web address, if they just went to Google and put paleotechnics in there.
It would come up,
right?
Or if they put my name, Tamara Wilder, in there, it comes up.
If you put Tamara, T-A-M-A-R-A, Wilder, W-I-L-D-E-R, or the word paleotechnics, P-A-L-E-O-T-E-C-H-N-I-C-S, in Google, the website that we are talking about, 3ws.paleotechnics.com, would come up for them, right?
Yeah, it comes up right at the top usually.
That's it sure did for me. Well, I just enjoyed this so much. Is there something, 20 years, that's a long time.
Yeah, I think it's actually 23 or 24 years now.
Right, it's more than 20 years, because I know, I had a private school that I did for more than 20 years, and you certainly learn a lot in the process.
Oh, absolutely. And learning how the things that I learn the most is learning from the kids and students that I'm working with.
Uh-huh.
And learning how to teach them better. That's sort of been, I guess, my area of expertise, is learning how to teach these skills. That this, you know, what I teach hasn't changed that much, but how I teach it has changed a lot over the years. And trying to give people the good experience of what I feel like is I'm just giving them, sort of opening a window and letting them see a world they might not have seen, because that's how I felt the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I was in college and I got invited to one of these things, and the first time you run into this, you're like, wow, I didn't even realize there was this world out here. And that's what I feel like I do, is I just sort of open a little window, give them one experience, and then a lot of people run with it and integrate it into their lives in different ways or get excited about it. Or, you know, a lot of some of the kids that I've worked with and students, they keep going to the gatherings. It's really completely changed their life like it did mine. And some people just integrate it into their life. But no matter how you integrate it into your life, how much you start adopting of the skills, it still, no matter what, gives you an appreciation, an understanding, and a connection of how of where things come from. And
right.
how things got to be how they are, and the energy, no matter if it's done by a machine or a person that goes into creating things. And so it just gives you, I think it's just important for everybody to get that connection.
Right. And, you know, I want to be sure I leave people with the concept that, you know, this isn't like some kind of, you get out a piece of paper and say, okay, this is my, this is the plan for, you know, what I'm going to teach today. Every program depends on the interest and age level of the group that you're going to be with, right?
But yeah, it's interesting, though, what they actually do with their hands is the same.
Yeah.
with all the different age groups.
Yeah.
It's more how I talk about what I'm doing that changes.
Right.
So the activities are, it's amazing, you know, I mean, making a bead and the string making, some of the more complicated technologies, I definitely do a less complicated version with the younger kids and if I have fewer people. So, you know, that one is something that changes drastically in how I show them how to make string depending on how much time we have. But, most everything else, they, even the adults, you know, so a kindergartner is doing the same thing as an adult does. And sometimes the kindergartners do it faster than the,
yes.
than the adults do. So it's, but then while they're doing it with young kids, I don't talk the technicalities so much. You know, I keep everything very simple and they're talking about process.
Right.
And then if we're in college level or with adult programs, then we're talking about all the technologies and we're talking about all the science behind it and the history,
right.
You know, so there's a lot more. Just information that's going in with the adult program.
Right. Well, for like, you know, when you bring in the physics and the chemistry,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're building on those earlier foundations that you start with the younger kids. And I just think it's just fantastic. Well, I once again just can't thank you enough for taking the time and the energy to, especially as busy as you are and all as involved as you are, to do this interview with me. I'm going to try to make the fair in Boonville. I see students in that area, and I do very much love Anderson Valley.
Yeah, and I would highly recommend it. You would enjoy. It's a highly recommended event. It's getting bigger each year, and I think it gives a picture of the Mendocino County community that's wonderful.
Yeah.
It brings everybody out of the woods and brings everybody out of the woodwork, and it's just such a wonderful event. And there's so much that can be learned, and it's very affordable as well and very enjoyable.
Yeah, it just sounds wonderful. So I thank you. It's just been my great pleasure, and I can't tell you how highly recommended you come from many directions, teachers especially, which, of course, I'm very interested in. And I just wish that – do you have maybe video or something so that people who don't live in our area could bring this to students?
I don't – I've been trying to work on that a little bit more of instructional video, but there is one video that there is a link from my website, and it's on YouTube. And if you go to YouTube, if you just search my name, it actually comes up. If you were to search Tamara Wilder, it comes up. And it was a video that was taken at a school program about 3 years ago or 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's a gorgeous video, and it's just a real quick snippet, you know, just about 5 minutes long. But
well,
that
when,
is a video that people can find.
Great. Well, I will, at the time that I'm post this interview on the Education Now Facebook page, I will be sure to include that YouTube video, and I will include it in the promotion for this show, because because I just think it's wonderful that it could go out beyond Northern California, what you're doing. Yeah, I just think it's so vital, and I understand now after talking to you and looking at all of this, why an old student of mine who is now a teacher said, you have to have Tamara Wilder on Education Now, Athena, and one of the board members as well. So thank you so very much. so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That makes me feel really good.
Yeah, thank you for what you do and what you give to our community and what you're giving possibly to a lot more people. It's just so very important. And once again, everyone, that website is 3WsPaleoTechnics.com. Thank you, Tamara.
Yeah, thank you very, very much, and have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.
You are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.